Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Where's Obama's Birth Certificate Radio here. I am Eric Rush. I am honored and privileged to be co-hosting, or rather guest hosting here tonight for Mike Bolin and the gang. We are looking at the congressional reaction to the sheriff's kits and the eligibility question with regard to President Barack Obama. Of course, that has been a massive controversy since he was elected president. And there's a lot of evidence, a lot of things that have come to light. For those of you who are not familiar with me, Eric Rush, I am an author, columnist, and recently, as of this summer, a host of the Full Contact with Eric Rush Live talk radio show. And I am on streaming from my website, ericrush.com, ericrush.com, Monday through Friday, 11 to a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. Now, I write regularly for WorldNet Daily, and I was, if you are not familiar with the Reverend Wright story, of course, I was the one who initially broke that in 2007. That was, by the campaign's admission, one of the most troublesome issues having to do with candidate Obama looking for the presidency there. I see that there are people piling up in the chat room. It is a pleasure to serve you tonight. I'm glad that you are all here. Let's see now. The issue of President Obama's eligibility. Obviously, we are aware that we've come under fire, of course, a lot of us who've been investigating this issue. I was personally much more concerned in 2007, 2008 with candidate Obama's policies, his politics. I had been looking into him, you know, just basically because of what I was doing at the time. I was very concerned about his politics because I knew that he went to this Trinity United Church of Christ, which practices black liberation theology, which is a Marxist-derived sort of apostate Christianity, and that he hung out with guys like Bill Ayers and a lot of other really, really radical folks. And, of course, like a lot of conservative libertarians, I was wondering why this was not being covered by the press, as it became apparent later on, the press was completely in the bag for the president or for the candidate at the time, which caused us a great deal of consternation and does to this day, although maybe not quite so much anymore. Now, the reason that the eligibility question and subsequently the question of Obama's birth certificate and other documents determining his eligibility to hold the office of president was initially raised in 2007 when MSNBC's Chris Matthews mistakenly stated that Obama was born in Indonesia. Another reporter writing for the Hawaii Advertiser also misstated that. There were issues also that came to light of him having presented himself as having been born in Kenya through his publisher and through other promotional materials that he had been using prior to seeking the presidency, which piqued the curiosity and the caution of a lot of people who are, respect the Constitution and the letter of the law, in as much as the Constitution stipulates that the President of the United States has to be a natural-born citizen. Now, birthplace isn't the sole consideration in establishing that status. If you are a U.S. citizen of U.S. Citizen parents and you happen to be born elsewhere, well, obviously they're not going to, you know, say that, oh, no, you were, you know, you're a citizen of Atlantis because you were born on a cruise ship halfway across the ocean or in another country. There are laws and stipulations and minutia surrounding all of that. Now, the question of this came about obviously because of some of the statements that had been made, as I mentioned, Chris Matthews and others, and then the promotional materials. And a lot of our detractors, the detractors who like to disparage folks like me and Mike Bolin and Sheriff Arpaio and Mike Zullo and Mario Apuzzo and on and on and on, is they think it's some sort of a knee-jerk, hate Obama, bunch of racists, want to get this guy no matter what and just throw the spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks in trying to get this man. Now, you know, that is sort of zealotry, if you ask me, and it's stupid and there's no evidence for that. Obviously, folks of color such as myself are not called racist in that pursuit. We're called a bunch of other flattering things. But the caution came to mind not only because of the evidence that was out there, but because you have a guy who, unlike most of the people who have sought the presidency, going all the way through America's history, this is not a guy who was around for years and years. This is not a guy who was an attorney and then a city councilman and then assemblyman and all of these things where these people come up. Or he wasn't a famous actor like Ronald Reagan, who had been around since the Jurassic period. He was this guy who appeared out of essentially nowhere. The state senator he had pursued. He had been launched into politics with some people who turned out to be shady, but I don't want to digress here. Looking into it, even the most or the least circumspect of journalists or investigators started running into walls when they started looking for the sort of the origin story of this guy. When he sought the presidency, that is the only time when we started seeing anything that even resembled an origin story, and it was very, very sketchy. Personally, you know, there are things between us investigators. They call us birthers, by the way. I think their take on that is we believe that Obama was born in Kenya and shouldn't be president, which is by no means the truth. Among us, there are people who think he might have been born elsewhere. There are people who think that he probably was born in the United States but has committed all sorts of document fraud and things of this nature. the question or the what folks like me and Mike Volin and quite a few others are putting out there is not any concrete determination as to who he is and where he's from. It has to do with this. We don't know. The origin narrative has so many holes in it, it isn't funny. We have a birth certificate that was obviously forged. Now, I have a pretty decent background in graphic design. I was into it long before we were doing computers, using computers. I'm not a computer guru by any means, but I was able to tell 15 minutes after I downloaded that thing from the White House that it was a fake, all right? And there were people with less knowledge than I have who could make that determination. There are people with far more knowledge than I have who quickly made that determination. There are probably junior high school students who could open up Adobe, Illustrator, Photoshop, Acrobat, whatever those things, and make the same determinations that were later enumerated by the cold case posse. And these are not suppositions. These are not theories. These are not things that some wild-eyed racist made up. These are technical facts. This birth certificate was never a document. It was never a piece of paper or parchment or whatever the heck they print those things on that was scanned or photographed or what have you and then represented. It was put together on a computer or computers out of pieces of other documents and other digital materials to put together this thing that was represented as his birth certificate. The Selective Service registration, similarly. And as some of the other investigators and I have looked into some of the other documents that have been put forth in this origin narrative to represent him, his mother, and other folks, they have been similarly fabricated and misrepresented. Now, to the detractors, you know, not that I care what they think, but at this point, particularly with the mountain of evidence against this president that has nothing to do with his birth certificate, you know, if you're supporting this guy at this point, you're either an ideologue and you're down with the whole totalitarian collectivist thing that he's trying to push forth, or you're just too damn stupid to be given a credence or a consideration in a discussion. You know, how is it that this evidence that is concrete is supposed to be overlooked? You know, are we supposed to just say, oh, okay, he has a forged birth certificate, but that's okay because he's black? Or that's okay because he's a nice guy? I don't understand the logic in that thing. I think from the point of view of an American who's concerned about where their country is going, they should be concerned about these things, particularly since this man has gone 180 degrees from where he said he was going to go with regard to what he said he was going to do with this country, for this country. When he first came on the scene and winding down to the 2008 election, you know, there were times when I thought he was almost Reagan-esque in his oratory. It isn't until you go back and you look at it in retrospect, juxtaposed against his history of Marxist association, that you go, oh man, well, this is a horse of a different color, isn't it? But everything that he has said he would do, he's done the opposite. We are in worse case economically. We are in than we were before he came along. Granted that there was, to be fair, a horrible economic mess left behind, contrary to the popular belief of our detractors, we don't worship the Republicans or nor George W. Bush. He was the, he was the second worst spender when you look at him next to Obama, and so we realize this, but economically we are now worse off. On the international scene, foreign policy, worse off. Domestic tranquility, worse off. Class warfare going on, race relations going down the spout. We've got an epidemic of black-on-white crime. We have activists who were sort of in the background, far-left activists who were sort of just kicking the can around. Nobody paid much attention to them, who have really been strutting their stuff since Obama came on the scene. And now we see that he's been in bed with guys like the new Black Panther Party since time immemorial. So what are we supposed to think? Okay, back to these documents. They're fraudulent. What are we supposed to do? Shut up? Not look at them? That is incomprehensible to me, okay? So this phenomenon, if you will, has developed. There was no proof that we had, given that the man's records have been sealed, something else that's been really indicative of his subterfuge, sealed college records, sealed passport records, sealed, people dying around the passport sanitization, which we may get into later, we may not. But then, of course, we had Jerome Corsi, who was going to imminently release his book in April of 2011, and within days of this book coming out, which is called Where's the Birth Certificate, the White House released this copy, or this document represented as Obama's long-form birth certificate. All right, it was posted on the White House website April 27, 2011, I'm supposed to tell the audience not to block their number when they're calling in, because I guess you can't get through or something, or we're not going to let you in if we can't tell who you are. We are going to be taking callers, and I would admonish you to be nice, but you can do what you want. I can handle you. All right. So this image was quickly declared a forgery. Law enforcement started looking into it. Investigators such as myself and other people who are credentialed investigators started looking into it. The Mariposa County, Arizona, called Case Posse. If you're familiar with Sheriff Joe Arpaio, he was a legend in my estimation long before this even happened. I've got family down in his Maricopa County, and it was like really wild the way that I thought the things that he did and how much people loved the guy down there. At any rate, I digress. So he's got 250 county residents. They expressed concern about their upcoming votes in 2012 would be compromised if the birth certificate wasn't authentic. So being the man that he is, he starts investigating. On November 18th and 19th of this year, Where's Obama's Birth Certificate.com founder Michael Volin visited Congress and distributed the sheriff's kits, which contain the information compiled by the Cold Case Posse. In Washington, Mike and his team met with aides, chiefs of staff, several congressmen to whom they showed the contents of these kits containing the criminal evidence of forgery and fraud in the birth certificate case and the selective service registration form. Now, once again, they're not going in there screaming about Obama being born in Kenya. The problem is, we don't know. The problem is, the President of the United States is representing fraudulent documents to verify his eligibility to be President of the United States. Now, this is no small thing, and it's gotten bigger as it's gone on. Why? Well, because the president has engaged in all sorts of treaties, has signed all sorts of executive orders, has appointed Supreme Court judges, innumerable people to various posts, some of whom I wonder how the heck they got approved, but that's another story. Waived background checks for some of these people who should have been, you know, who apparently wouldn't have been able to get elected dog catcher otherwise. And so now we have this infrastructure of all sorts of weirdos in our government. And should he be declared ineligible? Let's just say that in theory. Suddenly, all of this would be rendered null and void. Everything that he has signed his name on would be null and void. I want you to think about that. We've got, let's see, we've got a caller. Jeff from Pennsylvania has a question about the Hawaii Department of Health. Okay. Let's see. I'm going to have to, this is new to me, so I'm going to have to figure out how to get him on there. I'm having trouble finding these, let's see. I'm having trouble finding these callers. Can you put them on for me, Mr. Producer? Let's see. We're going to get on. Click on the mic icon. Yeah, I'm going to try to find this thing. Where is this? I don't want to disconnect myself, and this is.
Yeah, okay, he's on with you, Eric. Go right ahead. Jeff's on the air.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Producer. Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
How you doing? You have a question?
Well, I kind of do. I got another comment there. Mark McFaulin, he was on about one or two shows ago, and
yeah.
I think that fella needs to be commended for his bravery, because he didn't have to come out and speak about this. He's running for election. And for anybody, especially him being a Democrat, it's kind of a killer, if you know what I'm saying. But basically what he said, like I said, he sounded like a gentleman. I did some research on him that I could. I really found him to be kind of amazing. He's more with us than anything. But he said on his last show that we need to get going on this. And I've been doing a lot of research on this. I've been doing a lot of promoting on this. I put a couple ads in the paper. I've made handouts. I go door to door. I'm talking to everybody I can. And a lot of people, even in my own group, I belong to a tea party here in around Dubois, Pennsylvania. And what they're telling me is that's a dead issue and the media won't cover it and wah, wah, wah. Well, I'm a one, you heard that commercial Army of One? Well, I was in the Marines. I'm an Army of Two, maybe. I don't know. But anyways, basically, what Mark McFaulin said last time, we need to really get going and pushing this thing. And so I would just like to encourage everybody out there to do what we're doing. Make phone calls, get a sheriff kit, mail it out. Matter of fact, I mailed out several sheriff kits to the main representative. I sent a couple, two to John Boehner. Is that how you pronounce it? Boehner. I sent one to Eric Cantor. I sent two to Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
I sent one to James Claiborne and Robert Casey. So I'm just asking people out there, you know, we talk, but we got to do.
Well, you're absolutely right. And here's the deal. You know, some of these people in Congress, according to Lord Monckton, who also writes for WorldNet Daily, has said that, you know, some of these people in Congress have been very suspicious for a long time. But there are others who are either they're not knowledgeable, haven't investigated, or afraid to say anything, and don't feel that they have the people behind them. So, and obviously, because it hasn't been widely publicized, that stands to reason. Now, back in 2010, let's see, was it 2010? I guess I was in D.C. and I had a chance to speak to, he was running for president. And
is it Cody?
I spoke to the guy and I can't bring up his name. I sound like a total doofus.
That's okay.
He's the pro-life guy. He's got 1,000 kids. At any rate, I asked him about the birth certificate because we were down there at the Family Research Council thing, and his wife is really cool. She was actually into what we were doing. I was with Commander Kirchner and a bunch of the other folks, and Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum. And I was like to him, what about the birth certificate? And he was like, well, don't you think that if there was anything to that, the press would have torn him apart by now? Now, this is a guy in a position to know. And I don't think that he was being disingenuous. I think that this was not something that had come on his radar. And I think that I definitely think that you have a point in terms of things not coming on some of these folks' radar. Now, I'm certainly open to the fact that some of these people don't know, but I definitely do advocate this grassroots stuff. You know, one of the things that Dan Bongino said, the former Secret Service agent who's been all over what's going on lately, is he said, unless you have a ton of money, the only way you're going to get it done is through grassroots, tons of people making noise. And so that is, you know, that is definitely the way to go, in my opinion. And I've been saying that for some months. Thanks very much for your call. Now, let's see. We got, Chris from Louisiana has a question about the 1961 birth certificate. Chris, are you on there?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. How you doing?
Pretty good. Listen, I just want to inform you that the cold case posse uncovered that in 1961, the Honolulu Department of Health would record the birth of an unattended birth. Anyone, any citizen of Hawaii could walk in and just say, yeah, there was a baby born. And they also found out that on numerous occasions, a number of babies born in Japan, their families walked into the Department of Health in Honolulu and registered their births so that those babies could get American birth certificates and citizenship. And the Honolulu Department of Health registration logbook that Mike Zulu was not permitted to look at. In fact, they bum-rushed him out of the place with two thug law enforcement agents.
Yep.
The newspaper announcements were taken from that registration logbook. So Obama's birth announcements in the two newspapers in Honolulu are absolutely worthless.
Yeah, that what you're telling me was confirmed by Mike Zulo, and that is true. I mean, they were definitely able to do this, and you know, I find this particularly interesting on a personal level, because if you believe the narrative, wink wink, nudge nudge, the president and I were born in the same year. Actually, I'm older because I was born on January 1st, 1961. That's if you believe the narrative, and there is definitely some doubt to that. I happen to have a copy of my, you know, I have the original copy of my birth certificate my folks gave to me, or I probably took it from them when I moved out, and it looks very similar to birth certificates that were issued in Hawaii, which is weird because I was born in New York. So there was certain amount of uniformity there. And I've seen other ones that were from the same week that Obama was allegedly born in Hawaii, and they look like mine. They don't look like
his. Consider, if you please, Greta Van Susteren on her show, this is over a year now, says, oh, I know he was born in Hawaii. Well, there's the two newspaper announcements. I mean, this is the narrative that the mainstream media is just publishing just running roughshod over all of the facts. I was at the preliminary release of the findings of the cold case posse in Phoenix. The evidence is irrefutable.
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely irrefutable. And so the question is, of course, and will be become more of a question the more time goes by since these sheriff's kits have been distributed, is with the evidence out there, with it being public, with it being now in their faces, it becomes not a question of passivity or ignorance, but of complicity. You know, I understand, I mean, I was not, I obviously was not a fan of Obama's politics, but I think that it would have been wonderful if our first black president had been a guy who was a unifier and he was a this and a that. And I even had some conservatives who were saying to me around the election time, 2008, well, you know, maybe he'll just throw that by the wayside and do the right thing for the good of the country and be a uniter and this and that. And, you know, it was very wishful thinking, but I didn't believe it.
May I ask you a question?
What's that?
May I ask you a question? Could you please
tell me,
in American history, tell me a crime more sinister and of a greater magnitude than the criminal usurpation of the presidency by fraud?
Well, it's interesting that you mention that, Chris, because there are laws on the books which delineate that as an executable offense. The last time I mentioned that on my radio show, the left-wing website said that I was calling for Obama's execution, which obviously isn't true because, I mean, I had nothing to do with it. I neither committed the crime nor wrote the laws. That just happens to be a matter of fact.
Do you want to know what type of thugs we're dealing with? I was working
I know what type of thugs we're dealing with.
I was visited by the United States Secret Service agent. Okay, Agent Kirk, New Orleans office. These guys actually came and backed me up and questioned me where I was working at Emeralds Delmonico, the restaurant in New Orleans, because of conversations such as I'm having with you right now, that I'm a threat.
Yeah.
I'm an honorably discharged U.S. Army veteran. I'm an American.
Oh, you're one of the most dangerous people out there then. Right?
Apparently,
according
that's
to
how
these
they
guys.
Characterize us. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's exactly. That's how they characterize us. Look, I got to take another call. I've got Tim from Michigan. He's a graphic artist with a question.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, sir. My name's Tim.
Yep.
Eric, I just wanted to let you know, actually, I do not live in Michigan currently. I had lived there for quite some time. I was a graphic artist for the newspaper industry, 31 years in the business. When the birth certificate dropped, I took it to my editors. I showed them the layers. They called corporate headquarters. At the time, I was working for McClatchy. They told me not to worry about it. But anyway, kind of where I'm going with this is I worked in Lansing, Michigan for at least 10 years, and I still have a lot of friends in Lansing that are currently working at the newspaper. I have a friend that works in Detroit that's a managing editor at the Detroit News. And after the governor's candidate, you know, spoke out to Tim Stubeck on M Live, I was really fascinated. So I listened to his interview last week in quite some detail. Afterwards, I emailed my friend who is the ME at the Detroit News. You know, he basically told me, oh, well, they've already covered it on M Live, which is an internet site, and didn't even want to. They just won't touch
right.
it. They think I'm nuts. They think that I am crazy.
Well, of
yes,
course,
sir?
the characterization of people who even discuss this is that of a loon. I mean, that was by design. They push the narrative that people who bring this up are loons, and of course, people don't want to be called loons any more than they want to be called, you know, racists or child molesters or any number of other things. And so you have folks who are afraid to touch it because of that reason. And then you have other people who are afraid to touch it, whether it be people in the press or people in the, in Congress who don't want to touch it because they do not want their name associated with the crashing and burning of our first black president. And now I know that may sound superficial. I know that may sound petty, but you know, that's just the way it is. And I think that they're, I think that, it's unfortunate, that we still have that sort of, you know, we have that sort of mindset, but to let our country go the road down the road that it's going on the, for the sake of PC, to me, is as criminal as what these folks are doing. On the line, we have Mark McFarlane, candidate for governor of Michigan. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome. We are honored to have you. How are you doing this evening?
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
Mr. McFarlane?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I guess Tim has a question for you.
Okay.
I was just going to say that, you know, I saw your interview after you interviewed with Tim Stubick, and the news that you got, and of course, they kind of, you know, dogged you about it or made fun of you. They refer to you there as an obscure candidate. I mean, you're running as a Democrat candidate, but you're obviously coming in and challenging someone. It's almost as if they don't want to consider you as being legitimate to begin with. And then the second thing I'd like to say is that, you know, after you did the interview last week on this radio show, I wrote my friend, who is a really good friend, and he's the ME there in Detroit, and I sent him your interview, and you had called for a investigation, and I mean, I thought that was huge news. I told him that, you know, if he ran it, you know, he could receive threats, he could get all sorts of trouble. You know, he wrote me back and just said, oh, well, my competitor covered it, and he sent me the Stubick interview, which ran the week before.
Right. Well, you know, the media, they have a way of doing this. You know, they're trying to set up Mark Schauer as the Democratic candidate, and, you know, the union is backing him. The union has control over the Democratic Party. And I think that the liberal news, they don't know how to deal with a candidate like myself because they can't control me. Okay,
I hear
Mark Schauer. Mark Schauer is being controlled by the unions and Democratic Party. He has to really do what they say. The same way with the governor. The governor is really a puppet for the corporations. Okay, so they're trying to use character assassination, but it won't work because with this issue alone, you know, as a candidate, I will not back down from this issue. You know, they can call me a kook, they can, you know, they try to characterize people like that, but let's look at the truth, let's look at the evidence, and that's what's important to me.
Hallelujah. You know, I was always taught in journalism to pursue the proof. When the birth certificate dropped and I gathered all of my editors around, the managing editor, the city editor, the editor, I showed them all the layers. I showed them how it was dissected. At the time, I was working for McClatchy. They called corporate headquarters and called me back and said, oh, you know, don't worry about it. You know, and a few months later, I was laid off. Not to say that was the reason why, because, I mean, obviously newspapers are suffering horribly, but, you know, here we have the hugest story in the history of journalism, and if they would report the truth, their subscription would just skyrocket, but they will not touch it.
Well, and I think a lot of the media is under the threat of their licensing, because licensing is controlled by the federal government. And so
correct.
I think they're fearing that they will be losing their licensing if they press this issue too far. You know, I had talked about an international team, an international panel.
Correct.
Some people may not agree with that. We also, you know, we need to look at the U.S. House because they can initiate an investigation. We need to look at all these areas to be effective. And I think at the last time that I was on the 2-hour interview, someone had called in and he stated that, look, this he talked about how it would be an insult to every black American in this country that they are fearing a black backlash if this was exposed. And I agree with that caller. It would be an insult to every black person in this country that there would be rioting in the streets.
Well,
no,
I think
that wouldn't happen.
I do think that Detroit, with all of the problems
absolutely.
That it's
suffering, I absolutely agree.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, look, the truth is the truth. And
I'm with you, brother.
In this country, if we no longer want to look at the truth, if we want to just overlook the truth, then we're going down the wrong road. I mean, look at the JFK assassination. They covered that up, and they are still covering it up.
I'm with you. The only platform I have to try to get this information out is calling this radio show and my Facebook account. And, you know, I know the editor in Cincinnati. I know I know so many editors in Gannett. And right after that birth certificate dropped, I wrote them in detail, and they just defriended me. They don't want me talking about it on their Facebook page.
Well, I think that, you know, the theory is, and I talked about this before, the theory is that if they can threaten a former president, Bill Clinton, okay, if they can do that, okay, then they have some clout in this. But it takes people like yourself, like myself, and other people that have been dedicated to this to stand up for what's right. Go ahead.
To be quite honest with you, sir, you know, I'm almost fearful to call this show. I mean, I know that the NSA is listening to this call. I'm looking for work. I haven't found a job since I've been laid off. I'm fearful, but I also see what's happening to our country, and I'm going to stand up and speak out. And you know, the guy before me said that's what we need to do. So, hey, that's all we can do. I just wanted to let you know that I'm trying to get my friends in Michigan to look at you.
I appreciate it. We need people like you. We need people that will stand up. Because once you start running, you're done. You can't run from these people. Really. I appreciate it, sir.
Well,
I definitely
commend
you, Mark, for standing up for this, despite the... Yeah, I definitely commend you, Mark, for standing your ground despite the, you know, the detractors and the things that they say about you and
right.
With regard to, you know, the concerns of, you know, that our citizens or citizen journalists, whether, you know, prominent or otherwise, happen to have. You know, I've been swatted. I know a lot of people who have been harassed by either the Secret Service or what have you. If this weren't a fairly small community and the local police knew me, it might have turned out very, very different. Mark, where do you? You have a website, no doubt, for your candidacy. Would you like to throw that out, give that a quick plug?
Yes, markmcfarland.com.
Okay.
Eric,
how do you, is that MC?
That's MarkMcFarlin.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Eric?
Yeah. Yes.
The last thing I would like to say is, you know, to me, this is the linchpin. I mean, you look at this situation and you realize, I mean, I've written all my congressmen. I've written all my senators. I've written my governor. I've written my friends in the media. This is the linchpin, and that's why they're guarding it so securely. Once this collapses and once it crumbles, you're going to see the whole thing's corrupt.
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, not only do you have the what I was talking about before, if this came out as Obama being ineligible so many things would wind up being null and void, his Supreme Court appointments being two of the most notable. But the fact that this thing could happen, and the way you have citizens now looking much more with much more scrutiny at these things, what's going on in government. And I mean, I think that, as you said, the whole thing would unravel. I mean, I reported on my show a little known story over the last couple of days, where the government, the people of the nation of Iceland essentially overthrew their government by just protesting and saying, hey, you guys are a bunch of crooks, we want you out, we want you all to resign. And they just put so much political pressure on them that they had to resign. And not a drop of blood was shed, you know. So, I mean, I could see that happening here in the face of that kind of a scandal.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay, I've got, let's see. I have, Tim, thank you very much for your call, by the way.
Thank you for taking the...
Yeah, I have Sharon Rondeau from the Post and Email on the line, who is a good friend and colleague. Let's see if I can get her on here without blowing up the switchboard. Sharon, you there?
Hi, Eric. Yes, I am. Thank you.
Yeah, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing terrific. How about you?
I'm doing well. Hey, I don't know how much time, Mark, how much time you've got, Mark, What's that?
I can stay on.
Okay, excellent. If you just want to, you know, hang around, feel free to interject. I know that Sharon had some things on her mind. I don't know if you had any questions for Mark or not, but I wanted to thank you as well, Sharon, for getting the word out about the show tonight, because, you know, with these things mounting, it is really important that we have, you know, I mean, people are finally starting to realize that their voice does matter. And the more of them we have starting to use it, the better chance we have of, you know, saving this republic.
Absolutely. And I'll be very brief, because I think Mark and others probably have a lot to say as well. And Mark, good evening. I had asked you some questions last week, I remember, and very much enjoyed the conversation. Yeah, there is a lot going on, and I don't mean to in any way change any subject line that's already being followed. But Mike Zullo was on Carl Gallup's Freedom Friday show this evening. I happened to catch the second hour, and just as I tuned in, Mike had come on, and he made what I thought was a startling announcement, and that was that his posse does not agree with the findings of Douglas Vogt, not on the issue of the forgery. They are agreed on that it is a forgery, but the conclusions that Mr. Vogt has reached regarding who the forgers are. Mike very clearly said the cold case posse disagreed with those findings. He also said that he's been traveling extensively for 6 weeks. They hope to release new information, he did say, in March. So that's another, I guess, a goalpost that we have to look forward to. And they're saying that they have what he termed ironclad information regarding the forgery and some other evidence, of course, that they haven't made public. So that is this evening's news, in case anyone had not heard that yet.
That's very interesting. Well, like I said, that there's not always uniform agreement among us investigators, as I guess they call us birthers. but that's quite interesting. Now, there's been a lot of talk, and of course, had to mention this on my show this morning, about the unfortunate death of the Ms. Fuddy, the director of the Hawaii Health Director, where, you know, I realize that there are people who have certain suspicions around her, you know, dying in the plane crash, being the only one who survived, and all of this. She was involved in certifying this supposed birth certificate for the president, and now, of course, she is no longer with us. While we are, you know, our main goal is not to, you know, while our goal is not, you know, to get into a discussion of, you know, bumping off political threats or anything like that, which has definitely been postulated, we do have her unfortunate demise to consider, you know, and it is suspicious. Sharon, did you have any... Have you, I mean, obviously you hear from a lot of people on a daily basis, and investigators and fans and readers and all of that stuff. Is there anything in that vein that you have been made privy to or exposed to with regard to the, you know, the feedback from this unfortunate incident?
Yes, thank you for asking. That is actually the other big news, I would say, this evening. When Mike was speaking with Carl Gallup earlier, he reiterated something that he had reiterated or said earlier to P.P. Simmons' radio, and that is that he and Sheriff Arpaio are quite convinced that it was a tragic accident, and those were his words, I believe. They don't see anything else beyond that. I did also do some research on my own online this afternoon, and there's a lot more coming out about it, including eyewitnesses, rescuers. They haven't spoken yet with any of the survivors on camera or anything like that, but some details are emerging, because I have to say my first thought was what has happened here. And I feel terrible that Ms. Fuddy is deceased. And I did express my condolences in an article earlier today to her family and anyone who knew her, the public whom she apparently was very motivated to assist. We do know that she reportedly oversaw the copying of this birth certificate back in April of 2011. That's what we're told anyway. But at any rate, Mike Zullo said that he does not think in any way that there was foul play, and that was a point that he made. In fact, he said that first when he was on Carl's show this evening. That was the first statement he made. But they have made public the type of plane. It was a Cessna Grand Caravan, and the company that owned the plane, and the trips that they made. I guess that they make 5 trips every day from Honolulu out to this very remote part of Hawaii, which used to be a leper colony. And one report said it was an annual trip, and the other one said that there was some kind of a community dispute. And by law, the director of the Hawaii Health Department is also mayor of this, you know, I don't have it in front of me, is it Kalipapa or well, I may not be saying it right. I have it in one of my articles here. But she was mayor of that particular settlement, if you will, or community. And one report said that there was some kind of a dispute that she had gone out to settle. It's a very, very sad thing, in which a couple of the stories said that her deputy director, Keith Yamamoto, was holding her hand in the water when she very sadly expired. It's a very, very awful thing. And I think we all feel terrible about this, but we don't know yet why she died, and she's the only one who died. I did also find out that the pilot hit his head. His son reported to the AP that his father, who was the pilot, steadied the plane and was able to land it in the water despite the engine failure. That's what happened. And that the father, the pilot, hit his head. They think he's going to be okay. Right. He is recovering in a hospital. So this does sound to me like a horrible accident. But I'll tell you, I did not start out today believing that. I needed to see some more details, but I believe I've seen enough to convince me.
Okay. Well, you know, we will see what shakes out. Is there anything that you wanted to put out there? I thank you very much for calling in once again, Sharon, and for all your help. Was there anything that you wanted to? I have a lot of people on the line here now, so Was there anything else that you wanted to put out there?
No, thank you. Those two things were essentially the news of the evening, and I very much appreciate your taking my call.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You've definitely been a great support to me and to all of us out here in birther land.
Just add one thing. The audio of the Freedom Friday show is normally not available till Saturday morning when Carl gets it ready. It is available at obamareleaseyourrecords.blogspot.com right now if anyone would like to listen to that show.
Awesome. Thank you very much, and you have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Up now, we have Dave Hodges. He's got an excellent column. Let's see. Where did he go? Dave, are you there? No, I hope I did not hang up on him because now I have nobody on the switchboard. Learning curve. Okay, well, we're going to try to get Dave back, but Dave has an excellent column out today that speaks to some of the things that we're discussing tonight and some of the things that I brought up on my show today, Full Contact, this morning, and it's called the 93 Skeletons in Obama's Closet. One of the things that he starts out with is the infamous birth certificate. And, of course, it comes on the column, of course, comes on the heels of the unfortunate demise of Loretta Fuddy, who is the Hawaii State Health Director. She declared the birth certificate to be genuine in April of 2011. Now, given that there are so many unknowns at this point, I'm not going to launch into a discussion of potential plots to murder people or anything like that, but it does seem suspicious. I think I've got Dave back on here. Dave Hodges. Dave, are you there?
I am here. Boy, I was ready to come on, and someone flipped the switch, and I was no longer there.
Yeah.
But, I'm back, no worse for the wear.
Yeah, I apologize for that. I'm doing this, this isn't the technology that I'm used to dealing with on a daily basis, but like you said, no harm done. I looked at your column this morning about the 93 skeletons, and some colleagues and I were going over it and how you put this stuff together. You did mention the birth certificate and some of the other things that have been discussed not in the mainstream press, of course, journalists. Unexpectedly dying. You know, I recall Andrew Breitbart talking about the damning video. I mean, I can still see it in my mind's eye, and the next thing I know that he's dead. And then, of course, Michael Hastings. Now, I'm familiar with the level of investigation and so forth that I've been doing on a number of these things, some of them less than others. I was not initially, I told the audience earlier, I was not initially all that concerned about the birth certificate when Obama was elected, because I was much more afraid of his policy and politics, because I knew a great deal about them. So some of these things that you've gone over, I haven't been that on top of, although I do know a bit about them. I don't want to, I typically don't like to tell other people's stories. So I just wanted you to give a chance to expand on what you wrote in the 93 skeletons, what that's all about, and tracing back to these suspicious deaths that are out there.
Well, sure. I became concerned as I looked into the Fuddy mishap, And as I looked around, I mean, the trail of bodies close to this president, whose people who have a demise of some sort, seem to benefit his position. And, you know, like I said in the article when I started off, I was very careful. I don't think this president has blood on his hands. At worst case scenario, he has 1 degree separation away from these deaths. In another situation, you'd have to say, well, he's totally innocent, and these are all just coincidences. But this reminded me a little bit of the Kennedy assassination when MIT tried to run the numbers of people that had some connection to the Kennedy assassination dying unnatural deaths, and MIT couldn't even calculate the odds because the zeros were so numerous. And when I looked at the number 93, I actually sat down and physically counted them. And I said, well, there are at least 93 people here that in some fashion, when they met their demise, the president and his administration somehow benefited. And I looked at this, and I was reminded of the Kennedy assassination again, and I began to wonder, gee, is there a trail of deaths following this administration similar to what we saw with other people like Hillary Clinton, whose the deaths connected to the Clintons are well chronicled. Again, it's circumstantial. So I'm careful on how I express it, but it just seems like, you know, if you oppose this president and you're in a prominent enough of a position, you know, you might want to watch your backside. The thing that really got my attention with regard to the birth certificate was Lois Anderson. And her daughter, Zelda, you know, ages 79 and 52, they would have had some knowledge of Obama's background in Kenya. And not only did they meet a violent demise, and they were killed, as the witnesses say, by a vehicle that had diplomatic plates on it, and then supposedly the offenders were killed by the police, but that can't be verified. And the church where records for President Obama might be kept was burned to the ground.
Right.
You've got a whole host of circumstances there that are pretty compelling that makes this look very suspicious.
Yeah.
So when I began to look
does.
At this, Eric,
now,
I just said...
I recall...
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, I recall having... Now, I don't know that I've delved quite as much into it as you have, but of course I wrote an article, I guess it was probably back in 2008, of the Donald Young and the two other or at least one other man from the Trinity United Church of Christ who
mm-hmm.
was not only, you know, and these guys were murdered execution style, of course, and the proximity to the Obama campaign, Donald Young, it was later revealed, was something of a confidant of Barack Obama. There are people who said that they had a romantic relationship. I don't know whether that's true or not, but that he was close to the Obama campaign and that circle of people. And once again, of course, that in Chicago, they had everything in their backyard, was never looked at. But then, of course, you have 93 people is quite a few.
Well, it really is. And there was one gentleman that I did not include in the article that I think is noteworthy, and he has an ancillary relationship to Obama, and that gentleman would be Jeff Joe Black. And Jeff Joe Black approached me to come on my show after Rahm Emanuel left the Obama administration to run for mayor of Chicago. And Rahm Emanuel had his own residency issues too, reminiscent of the president's birther issue. And Jeff Joe Black was very quick to challenge it. He was part of the We Are Change group in that area. And as he was set to come on my show, and he said he had all kinds of evidence linking Rahm Emanuel and Barack Obama to nefarious activities, and that Rahm Emanuel, he believed, was sent to Chicago to someday oversee some nefarious, perhaps false flag event in the future. And he had some pretty good information. I was going to give him a little bit of rope. And 2 days before he was to come on, he called me and said, I'm going into hiding. Well, he came out of hiding about a year and a half later, contacted me again, and we began a dialogue. And interestingly enough, he died a violent death while he was in Philadelphia. Blunt force trauma to the head, thrown off a bridge over a highway. And this is a guy who we knew, and I say we, my news director and I and our producer, we knew him personally. And he was a little bit on the eccentric side, but his information generally checked out. And that was when I first really became concerned that President Obama's ideas just aren't dangerous because of the level of socialism they introduced to this country, that this administration might be dangerous because they don't allow dissent. Dissent that's threatening to this administration. And that was the first hint that I had that something of this magnitude and level could be going on.
Wow. And that's some pretty mind-blowing stuff. I mean, I know that the Clinton administration had been sort of touched to an extent by the same sort of speculations or accusations, if you want to call them that. But, you know, I also tend to agree that if you have a, I guess, an organization, because any presidential administration or the circle of people around a candidate are sort of a culture unto themselves, and it varies from candidate to candidate or administration or administration. And you very well could have a situation in which, you know, I'm certainly not going to render Barack Obama white as snow, but you may have people who are identifying folks who they believe might be potentially dangerous to the candidate, and now, of course, the president and or the administration, and could be taking it upon themselves to do these things. I don't necessarily believe that as autocratic as Obama comes across, that he's necessarily calling the shots on everything. I think a lot of what is being put out there has its genesis in, you know, Valerie Jarrett, for example, or other folks, Axelrod when he was there, Rahm Emanuel once again. But as you said, you know, the socialism and the culture of the administration are what is actually pretty dangerous, I think. I mean, we all tend to think that presidential administrations do things that are questionable from time to time, and of course some of them have been called out for them. But this rises far and beyond the sorts of things that Americans may complain about from time to time, but have come to expect.
Well, I don't know that expecting it is a camp that I want to place myself in.
Yeah,
I can handle disagreements between our elected leaders and my own personal and political philosophies. What I can't accept are the thuggish behaviors that we see coming out of this administration, and thuggish behaviors that we can quantitatively identify. And this administration, to me, is no better than an organized crime outfit. And if these 93 skeletons are indeed, at least a good number of them, or even if just one of them, is the result of some lieutenant in the Obama administration making a decision someone must die to preserve the status quo, that's unacceptable to me as an American. And that's why I wrote the article.
I agree.
And I didn't write this article lightly. You know, I have to consider a number of things, as we all do, our professional reputation, our credibility. And really, if this is true,
absolutely,
you know, at some degree, Eric, I'm risking my safety as well.
Well, definitely. I mean, when we have things like, you know, Michael Hastings, as I've said on my show, and I said a little bit earlier, you know, I've been swatted. If I didn't live in such a small community with and had friends among the local police and sheriffs and stuff, it might have gone down quite a bit differently. Other conservatives, you know, who are out there have been had similar things happen, the Secret Service and what have you. So it's definitely not something to take lightly. And you know, I think in a way it goes beyond thuggish. And as I've written about, I think that it also goes beyond some of the you know, things that we're seeing occur domestically. Just quickly, I want to give out I've been reminded to give out the call-in number. The call-in number, if you want to get on the air here, it's 347-989-8853. That's 347-989-8853. Is there anything else that you wanted to say? I mean, you're welcome to stick around for a while if you want to, Dave, but I have realized that you came on kind of short notice and that you your life
well, that's,
doesn't
that's
revolve around
that
me.
Goes with the territory in this business, so that's fine. Yeah, I just think, you know, you look at, I'd like to talk for a second just about the composition of the Obama administration. And when you really dig into it, I wrote a piece on Valerie Jarrett the day before, and I do consider her to be one of the, if not the most dangerous woman in America, because I dug into her background, and this is part and parcel to who the president surrounds himself with, and it's happened often enough that I can't, you know, chalk this up to, you know, an inadvertent mistake or an oversight. Valerie Jarrett mm-hmm. was a slumlord of the worst degree. And I did some digging into this. I've seen interviews on YouTube with some of the victims of her slumlording ways. She was actually dismissed from Mayor Daley's organization for incompetence, corruption, and being a slumlord. Now, that says something if one of the corrupt, most corrupt administrations in mayoral history in this country will dismiss you for being corrupt. But that's what happened to Valerie Jarrett. And how does someone like this, who has connections, strong connections, you know, with her parents into the Weatherman Underground and hanging with that kind of group, how does she get to be senior White House advisor and have the ear of the president on every single issue? That greatly concerns me. And I think every American should be asking, why is this being allowed to go on? And one other thing I wanted to raise, and maybe you'll touch on this later on the show when I'm gone, I have occasion here in Arizona where I live. I got to know a lot of past and present state legislators, and they're kind of the first cousin to our congressmen. They run in the same circles. They rub elbows with them, and they talk to them. And one of the things that I talked to Martha Trowbridge about when we talked about me coming on the show tonight is almost to a person with the individuals that I know that are familiar with our congresspeople, and I don't have intimate relationships with our congresspeople like I do with our state people, but what I hear from them is they know what's going on. They believe that an economic collapse is coming. They believe the enforcement of martial law is coming. They also get to, as Nancy Pelosi said on 60 Minutes, get to engage in some things that would send you and I to jail, like insider trading. And the reason that Obama doesn't get challenged on things like Benghazi and things like this trail of bodies that I wrote about today, the reason they give him a free pass and they just look right over the problems is because, number one, I've been told they're afraid, and number two, they'd like the gravy train to keep coming. So that was something that I would really wanted to put out.
Yeah, and that,
the Congress
of course,
is not ignorant. Eric, if you and I can find this stuff, if you and I can find this, you know darn good and well Congress knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's
and,
really,
and that,
that's
of
really
course,
the, when,
is
when
the
I
problem,
look at America
and,
today.
And one of the...
Yeah, I'm sorry, Eric. We're getting just a little bit of a delay there, and I'm sorry. That's what threw me off.
Oh, okay. No, that's all right. Please go on.
Well, I do. I'm one of those old-fashioned guys that thinks that character counts, and I certainly am not a perfect individual. But you know, I like you, like most people, try to conduct my life honorably and be fair with people and be tolerant of people who have different values than myself. But you know, I have to draw a line with this administration that I think is the most corrupt administration in American history. I mean, my least favorite president, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, would have been Woodrow Wilson for all the negative things he brought the American people. And then before him would have been Ulysses S. Grant because he was drunk on the job, and that was the most corrupt administration in American history. But this administration has passed both of these administrations, and we're not even done. The massive spying that has gone from the Patriot Act to an unprecedented level where literally our every move, our every conversation, our every text is monitored. And here's the thing that nobody seems to be asking in the media. They argue about whether or not the NSA is conducting surveillance to the degree that they are under this administration. Well, to me, that is an irrelevant argument. The fact is they're breaking the Fourth Amendment, And tell me in world history, when has a totalitarian regime ever done the data compiling that's going on today and not used that information to act negatively against some segment of its population? That's what concerns me. And yes, I know I'm really stepping out on a limb here, but is this administration capable of roundups based on political dissidency? Are they capable of perhaps even terminating people? And I would submit as proof of that the fact that this president pushed through the NDAA, which basically gutted the U.S. Constitution, where we can be taken off the street without due process and disappeared. We can be sent out of the country to a rendition camp. We can be killed and no one would know. And this runs part and parcel to the article that I wrote today with the 93 skeletons. If I didn't think there was good ancillary proof to support this extreme position in view of the president, I wouldn't have written this. I would have chalked this up to an interesting dinner conversation and let it ride. But when you consider this 93 skeletons in the context of the things that I'm talking about, this administration is dangerous to every American who dares speak out against it. Now I'll take a breath.
I quite agree. And for my part, I have come out and I have said that I think the administration is capable of that. Knowing the communist roots and some of the background of this president, when he was, I've had those fears pretty much as soon as he was elected. I do have some of the same concerns as some of those lawmakers who can see martial law and things like that coming down the pike. But speaking to what you said with regard to those who don't want to act because they're afraid or because of the gravy train still going, you know, that again comes down to the to character, and that's the problem. You know, it transcends party at this point. It's not just a matter of democratic ideologues who are in sync with the program. It has to do with the majority of the lawmakers we now have in Congress and the Senate, who are concerned about what? Their pocketbooks, their legacies. I mean, if there's nowhere for their children and grandchildren to grow up, I mean, if they're essentially going to be enslaved, what difference does it make?
Well, I think for a lot of these people, they don't live beyond Friday. They live in the moment. They're looking for instant gratification. And I'm sorry if I interject some psychological profiling here, because that's what I teach at the graduate and undergraduate level.
Oh, that's quite all right.
But that's how I see these people. They're, a lot of the Congress people go to Congress now to cash in. They like the ego gratification they get from the attention, but they also like the perks. I mean, look at Dianne Feinstein. She's never held a job in anything other than being a public servant. But in that time, she's gone from a net worth of $1 million to, when she entered the Senate, to today it's estimated to be over $200 million. And she has received many ethics rebukes for basically steering government contracts in the direction of her husband's company, the last of which, I believe, the post office situation comes into play. And why is she still in office? What the American people say when we turn the other cheek and don't act against people like this and remove them through the democratic process is, we're okay with this. So really, should we be surprised at the things that you and I are talking about right now? Because this is up to us to fix this mess.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. Hey, I have Commander Charles Kirchner on the line, who is who has become a friend as well as a colleague. We got to meet in D.C. as well. I'm going to bring him up here and have him weigh in on all this. The commander has worked tirelessly on this issue. Commander, are you there?
Yes, I am, Eric. Good evening,
gentlemen.
How are
you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, and it's great to hear your voice again. I really enjoyed meeting you in Washington at the Values Voter Summit a few years ago. I think we're getting closer and closer to breaking this open. And I was listening, and I heard the gentleman there, excuse me if your first name slipped my mind, but mentioning about Valerie Jarrett. She's an Iranian citizen, too. Did everybody know that?
Yes.
Here we have the
right brain of Obama is an Iranian citizen secretly negotiating with the Iranians.
That is something that I was actually thinking of, was going to bring up. And, you know, not only is she of the same school of having, you know, learned at the feet of, as it were, of old school Marxists, but she has allegiances that don't appear to be, they don't appear to hold the United States and its constitution above all else, which is what we normally expect strange reason from our public servants.
Many of Obama's circle, as you well know, Eric, are what they call red diaper babies. You know, Bill Ayers, Michael Klonsky, Valerie Jarrett. The list, you can compile quite a long list of communist red diaper baby associates that hate America, want to completely turn it into a socialist system. And then you combine that with the Iranian citizenship and the foreign money funneled in from the Arabs to overturn our country, bring us down, destroy our military power. And myself, as a military man, I'm particularly disturbed that Obama has a forged draft card, and just many, many things going on here that this country is in great danger, great danger.
Well, we've been overtaken.
Well, the more
we've had a coup d'etat, and that's been led by the international bankers. But their agents, agents provocateur, is the members of the Obama administration.
We've been infiltrated and taken over from within. Saul Alinsky on steroids.
Exactly.
And we have been maneuvered through, you know, into this position over a long period of time. And I agree, and I do sort of, you know, qualify the fact that Americans did get. Fat and happy and complacent, and we trusted the government too much. And of course, we were encouraged to do that. But in the spirit of living in the solution, of course, we have to look at the reality. And the fact is that this has been, you know, to put it indelicately, what the Obama administration is doing has been the wet dream of old school communists and some
Absolutely.
Of these international globalists for a long, long, long time.
Well, you know, Obama taught Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals to many organizations.
Yeah.
He's a grand master of Saul Alinsky, and Saul Alinsky said, infiltrate the system and take it over from within. Bore in and take it over from within in 40 years instead of being in the streets 40, 50 years ago. He told these SDSers, get your degrees, work your way up to the system, and in 40, 50 years, you'll be at the peak of all your careers and academia and government and judicial and nonprofits and the media, and will take over this country from within and convert it to a socialist nation.
Well, one of the things that I was fortunate to do is I made the acquaintance of the late Larry Grathwall, who infiltrated the Weathermen Underground, and in particular Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. And Larry was quite clear when he appeared on my show three times, saying that this group launched Obama's career from their living room in Hyde Park, Chicago, when he ran for the state Senate. And I'll go back to a conversation that Larry had with Bill Ayers, and I think this is relevant to what we were talking about earlier, Eric, that Larry asked Ayers, what will you do when you take over? And he hesitated, and he said, well, first thing we'll probably have to do is incarcerate 50 million Americans, and we'll probably have to do away with half of them.
Right.
And I think that speaks to the mindset of this administration, and that also helped motivate me to write this article today, 93 Skeletons in Obama's Closet.
We're dealing with old-school SDSers that have never given up, and they're in the Communist Party USA and the DSA, and they got a new one called the MDS, I think. I don't know what exactly the M, I think my Mature Democratic Socialist, but I don't know what it stands for. But these are people who are all networked. They're all networked, and they're out to bring this country down. The Cloward-Piven strategy, Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radical. The Cloward-Piven strategy, for those that are listening don't know, it's to spend the country into bankruptcy, create such a manufactured, terrible crisis that the people will be in revolutionary mode, martial law will be declared, and they'll just take over the country and install a socialist, national socialist government. Now, collapsing 1/6 of the economy with a health care plan that's designed to fail from the start, looks like that could be the item that
they
pulled on us, to collapse 1/6 of the economy, that millions of people won't have health care, and if people take to the streets, he'll declare martial law, and we'll never have a constitutional republic again.
Are you guys aware, and I came across this last year, and I just wrote an article on this, that all the major league sports franchises have offered up their stadiums for refugee centers, i.e. detention camps, as has Simon Properties, the largest owner of malls in North America. And we're now even seeing, like, a Giant Stadium, and in Denver where the Denver Broncos play, they've done these martial law drills where they take children without their parents' permission to these centers to lure the parents in. And I know this sounds terribly conspiratorial, but this is on the record. This is real. And when you talk about martial law coming about, I think these are things that we all need to be very worried about. Are we going to look at millions of Americans, as Bill Lehrer said, forcibly detained and maybe half of us executed?
There's nothing wrong with the word conspiracy. They throw out conspiracy theory. This is a real conspiracy. Saul Alinsky told us, and he told the SDSers, exactly what to do, and they've been conspiring ever since. This is a conspiracy to overthrow the Constitutional Republic, to destroy our economic power with the cloud-driven system, and in particular, which the KGB and the people at maybe the Chinese Communist Intelligence, Cuban Intelligence, advise these people, bring down our military power. That's what they're after.
How aware are you of the Russian and Chinese soldiers that currently are in this country?
It isn't paranoia if they're really out to get them.
It's a real conspiracy. It's nothing but a plan. Conspiracy is another word for a plan by two or more people. They're in Hawaii, I heard. Chinese soldiers are there now.
Yeah, they came in for the GridX2 power grid takedown drill, and they're also going to be participating along with the Russians in RIMPAC, which is the largest war game in the world. And I find this really interesting because RIMPAC historically has run to counter Chinese and Russian forces in the Pacific through a series of war games, and now we're inviting them in to be a part of it.
I read Navy news. You know that the Chinese tried to cause a collision with an American cruiser just a few days ago?
Hey, guys, I have...
Hello?
I have Cheryl from Texas. She's only got a couple of minutes, so I'm going to bring her
I'll
she's got a question for either of you guys.
Oh, you wanted me to take a... Okay.
Hi, this is Cheryl in Fort Worth. How are you doing?
I'm great.
I just want to thank you for
I am doing well. How are
on.
You?
I just want to thank you for coming on. I'm on wheresobamasbirthcertificate.com. I gave Ted Cruz a copy of the sheriff's kit and took one over to Kay Granger's office and gave one to a couple of other people. And anyway, I just wanted to thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Did you see the ad I ran, Cheryl, to support that effort? Did you see the full-page ad I ran in the Washington Times National to support that effort?
I have seen one or two ads. I don't know if I've seen all the ads, but I've seen at least one. I know I've seen at least one and maybe two.
All right.
They're great. So, anyway, I just wanted to call in. I didn't have a lot of time, but I just wanted to call in and say hi and thank you for coming on. We really appreciate your work and contributing and supporting the cause.
Thank you for saying so. Thank you for saying
you
so, and
welcome.
Thanks for calling
thank
in.
Thank you, Cheryl.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
You have a great weekend.
Bye-bye. You too.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right.
Can I put out my website, Eric, if you don't mind?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Plug your website.
Yeah, the site that I run, is the website is protectourliberty.org, protectourliberty.org, and my blog is CDR Kirchner, that's CDRKERCHNER.wordpress.com. And I just, for those who maybe don't know, I just ran a full-page ad in the Washington Times National Weekly supporting Mike Boland and Where's Obama's Birth Certificate and the Sheriff's Kit process. And from what Mike Boland told me, he wanted his phone number put in there, and I cautioned, but his phone was ringing for almost like 3 days straight for getting to get sheriff kits.
Well, that is an awesome thing that you did there. Mm-hmm. Eric, I'm going to have to run, and it's been great being on with you guys, and I'd certainly love to come back. And if I might, too, my website is thecommonsenseshow.com.
Yes.
I have a radio show, and the listening details are on my website.
Nice chatting with you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
excellent.
Been a pleasure being on with
you
guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for all that you guys do. You're terrific.
Thanks for coming on, and have a great weekend. God bless.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Eric, would you like me to hang on, or do you want me to say goodbye?
And hang on.
Okay, I'll hang on if you don't mind.
No, not at all. I'm definitely happy to have you hang on. Also, folks out there, if you want to check out what I've been doing, of course, that's ericrush.com. That's ericrush.com. And my show is Full Contact with Eric Rush Live, which airs, or rather streams, from my website at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday. We've got Dominic from Riverside, California. Dominic, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello. How you doing?
How are you guys doing tonight? Pretty good.
We're doing well.
I have a real quick question. Say again?
Yeah.
I have a real quick question here. I was just talking with Mike here a minute ago. I don't understand. We're giving these politicians these sheriff kits. When these politicians are so corrupt, I don't understand why anybody would even want to work with any of these politicians or anything they have to say in light of all that's been going on. Can't they see? I mean, are you there?
Yeah.
I think they know already. They're just trying to do a tap dance, the old Texas, what's that movie, Whorehouse in Texas?
Here's the thing. I can no longer entrust these people with anything, okay? Not along a sheriff's kit or any kit, okay?
But by giving them notice of misprision of felony, they are on record now that they've been
Precisely.
Right. I understand that. And that is wonderful. My next question is, where is the enforcement for this? Okay? The enforcement is we, the people, the fourth branch of government, which is basically our grand juries. Okay? We stand up a grand jury. We have an indictment. Where do we go?
Grand jury would take it to the judicial system, and the judicial system has left us down. It's like Stalin said about the Pope. How many divisions does he have?
I understand. Trust me, I've been studying this for about 20 years. I understand. The puppet grand juries that are in the courts, along with all the attorneys working through the Bar Association, which is a fraud, I understand and know all that. I don't know how many listeners are on the phone that either do know about it or don't know about it, but that's what's going on.
There's only two ways he's going to be taken out of office. Congress is going to have to wake up and appoint a congressional investigation and open public hearings and a special prosecutor the whole world can watch, or Obama's going to create a second civil war, and it's going to go out that way.
I agree with the second one because I think the probability of that happening is there's more chances of that happening and getting a result than the first avenue of remedy. My question
Offer a third option.
Okay.
The third option is, of course, these politicians who, of course, we cannot trust. They have been given the sheriff's kits, and a lot of them are seeing the way that the sentiment is going, and a lot of them do recognize the dangerous ground that Obama is treading. Now, if we were to suddenly find ourselves in a position such as, for example, the nation of Iceland, where the people basically streamed into the streets and said, "You guys are crooks, get out," you've got a circumstance wherein, as you said, Obama could call out the military and try to incarcerate or gun us all down, But in that scenario, you also have politicians who are going to be far more aware than they were 6 months ago or even 2 months ago that they now have the support of the people in removing this tyrant.
If a million people camp out in Lafayette Park, that would work. That would work.
That is just what they did in Iceland.
Right.
Not a drop of blood.
I've been with the military here 31 years. Okay. I have never seen our defenses so weak and so vulnerable as I ever have. We've been shedding our military since the Bush administration, and Clinton didn't do a bad job neither. They're both a bunch of communists. Okay.
Well, they're all on the same page.
Clinton signed my retirement letter.
Yeah. Well, Clinton's on the same page with these guys. I mean, there's this stuff coming out of the Middle East right now involving the Muslim Brotherhood and the Clintons that'd blow your mind. You know, I mean,
no,
these guys have been in bed together for a long time.
Can I throw something out?
It wouldn't blow my mind, you know why? I see it. I'm right there.
Can I throw something out that I heard?
Yeah, Dominic, thank you very much for your call. By all means, Commander.
Yeah, what I've heard is that Homeland Security has briefed all these congressmen and senators and all the big media and everybody behind the scenes that 100 or 500 cities will burn if we try to do anything to take Obama out through the Congress or any other way. And they have humored themselves into believing that they're doing a noble motive by protecting the people from the truth, that we can handle
right.
it, that the blacks will riot. And like Mark Gillar said the other day, that is an insult to the black people. If you expose the true fraud of Obama and the violations of the Constitution and the communism and the absolute thuggery of these people, and Valerie Jarrett is an example, they will stand with us. And the few that do decide to riot, the 95% of the people that will be on the side of the Constitution, the glue that holds this country together, will easily handle that mess. They think they're being noble by not doing anything. They think they're being noble.
They've been maneuvered into thinking that they're being noble when, in fact, it's been the machine, the
mm-hmm.
Obama machine, and the Marxists, of which there are many in Congress, who have done that in order to give Obama the time to do what he wants to do. And then, of course, unless he declares himself emperor, then I suppose he can hand off to Hillary in 2016. And I think that she's probably just as dangerous. But
they're creating what in their mind is like the noble lie. We're saving the country from revolution and millions of people being, you know, wounded and dying. That's what they think they're doing.
Yeah,
Neville Chamberlain approach to evil.
Yeah, and it is evil. And on my show, I definitely do not walk on eggshells around that. I call evil evil, and I'm very happy to do so. We have Tom from Bakersfield on the phone. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Eric. I wanted to discuss the plane crash tragedy just for a minute. And I wanted to commend Mr. Zullo for his statements today regarding the fact that there's no reason to believe at this point. He did say at this time that there's no nefarious activity that took place. And there were many articles written, and I glanced at the titles on the articles. Huffington Post, for example, Birther Movement capitalizes on Loretta Fuddy's death. LA Times, fatal Hawaii plane crash triggers fresh conspiracy theories. And So to me, it's a Alinsky tactic where the press is out there immediately trying to quell any suspicion, and anybody that would make any suggestion would immediately be considered a kook, a crazy person.
They create straw men on our side that aren't there. They create a straw man position that we are this, we are that, and then they proceed to knock it down.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, but,
they,
you know,
it's preemptive. It's preemptive damage control. They presume, of course, that we're going to act in a certain way, or that their detractors will. And of course, it helps to make us look like nuts. You know, if anyone comes out and even suggests that it might be so I think that Zulo probably, in the interest of responsibility, make the right move. Now, Tom, you were involved in the sheriff's kit distributions?
I was. I went back with Mike and knocked on doors. Jeff, one of your previous callers, and I were together, and we called on 20 different offices and presented sheriff's kits. And
awesome.
The grand prize to us was being able to meet with the majority whip of the House, Senator Kevin McCarthy, and he gave us 30 minutes
great.
Of time.
How's he doing? Is
him
he
a
gonna, get a follow-up been made to him? Is he going to do anything?
He committed to me that he would look into it. He was especially interested in the Selective Service Card video.
Exactly.
He was unaware. That's an easy one to grasp. And
that's why I ran my full page ad on that subject, and we showed that to my congressman Charlie Denton. His eyes stood up, but then after 3 weeks of follow up, he comes back. His answer was, "We believe he's an American citizen." End of story.
Yeah.
And we said, "We never talked to you about his citizenship. We're talking about a forged draft card and a forged birth document on the internet." So they gave us double talk.
Yeah, I'm in the process of following up with him, and I will continue it. And when I do get an answer, I'll certainly let everybody know. But back to the crash, I was just doing a little back-of-the-envelope calculations, and I'm not a statistician. I'm not an investigator.
Uh-huh.
I'm just a person that is observant, and I read a lot, and I'm a patriot and concerned about our country. But let's just, you know, they interviewed the president of the company, and he said the company's been in business for 20 years. It's never had an accident. And I went to their website. They have 28 flights a day. Let's assume they fly them every day. And those flights, let's say they're 20 seats. I mean, that's a 1 in 4 million chance that there's going to be a death, an accident and a death. And couple that with the fact that this is the person. I mean, what are the odds of that? They're astronomical. Okay? Just from
a statistical standpoint.
Wow. Okay? So you got to open your eyes and say, okay, well, that's worth looking at. Then when you add to that, the pilot said that there was a catastrophic engine failure upon takeoff, which is what caused him to land a plane in the ocean, whether it was soft landing on it. They didn't report that. So catastrophic. It was broad daylight, 3:15 p.m., clear weather. The airplane had no previous problems. It had been certified. And all these things. And then what do you have? The NTSB comes out with a statement immediately and says that the location, the wind and wave conditions will make the likelihood of the plane will not be recovered.
Unbelievable.
Which is preposterous.
Pure
coincidence,
right?
Because
they can recover
World War II subs, and they can't.
They recovered
the
Titanic, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You know, but for them to say that it's you see all this, and it's almost as if they're conditioning the average reader, the average person. And so when somebody questions it now, immediately, well, you're one of those crazy. But I also wanted to also read that Yamamoto, I don't know if he's number two person there in the office, but he was on the plane. He was the one that put the life jacket on Fuddy. helped, he said, it helped her into the life jacket and held her hand. And they were all floating. They were floating together, and she let go, and there was no response from her.
Yeah, I read that as well.
Like, you wouldn't hold on to a friend just in case she just passed out. I mean, that's unbelievable to hear that story.
You know, and
yes,
Commander, I saw one of your posts in one of the websites about making sure that a full autopsy is performed and
toxicology.
Yeah, absolutely. I just hope that that gets done. If there's any way that we can do anything to make sure that that happens, I don't know if we have any.
Is she
going to
be buried or cremated? And how soon?
We don't know.
I didn't see anything about
that. We don't know
that.
Yeah. Tom, thank you very much for your call. I've got some more folks here. You have a great weekend.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I was also talking to someone, you know, when JFK Jr. died in the single plane accident, they were interviewing pilots all over the place. Asking why he was flying a single-engine plane. And I brought that up to a friend of mine because pilots have told me they would never fly any farther from the water in a single-engine plane than they could swim to back to land. Otherwise, they'd want a dual-engine plane. And today I was talking with someone who has flown the Cessna Caravan, which is the single-engine plane that went down there. Now, they had two different kinds of engines they used to run in them. Both of them were good. One was a lot better than the other, which was still decent, but that they were basically, as he described them, bulletproof. They don't fail. In order to have a catastrophic engine failure, you would almost have to do something to it.
What's
to compromise
the glide slope?
Yeah.
What's the glide slope on a failure of the engine? How many feet horizontal for every foot of drop do you get?
Exactly, and obviously you know more about that than I do, but we have Pam from Wisconsin joining us out there. Pam, are you there?
Brown.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Pam.
Trying to hide from the grandkids, get in a quiet spot.
Well, we're glad you got through.
Yeah, I'm so upset about this. I started my U.S. Constitutional Kids site. So I started it on Facebook already. I've got them already saying, I ask them, they're like 2 and 4, and I ask them, what's your favorite, what's your U.S. Constitution that you like the best? And he's 2, and he only knows the number 2, so it's perfect for him. 2.
Uh-huh.
And he says it with such,
excellent.
You know, you should hear him. He says it, and it's just like 2. Of course it's 2. You know, so it's really pretty funny.
That's great.
But I had a question on when you were saying that the Homeland Security had briefed the Congress, I don't know, all the politicians, I don't know how many, that it was in our best interest to be lying to be deceived.
Right.
That sounds like about
truth.
It.
You can't handle the truth, or because 100,000 people will be shot or wounded or die, and 500 cities will burn. That's what they were told.
Well, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the
top 25 radio host that was briefed by that very subject, and he has a sworn affidavit with the Canadian Free Press newspaper up in Canada, the online newspaper, they have custody of it. It was one of the top 25 radio hosts that was briefed in the same very manner.
And that just does not make sense. I ended up giving Paul Ryan one,
and
I gave the sheriff's kit. I call myself the volunteer Wisconsin resident liaison with the sheriff's kit. So I gave one to. I went over there to Ron's Paul Ryan's office a couple of times because he's takes care of this district here, and then I went over to Ron Johnson and what I did is I wrote out a sign off sheet that I had the person sign off that they were going to give it to. Paul Ryan and Ron Johnson. So, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to see them, so I wanted to sign it off that here, this is in your hands now. From your hands, it goes to Paul Ryan, and it says right there on the sign-off sheet that so-and-so, whoever it was, Megan and Sarah, that's what they were going to do to make sure that he got it. So, I had them sign off on that, those sheets that they have both of these, the Senator Ron Johnson and then the Rep Paul Ryan, both have these. So I did that. But and then I did ask him a couple of questions. You know, I sent them questions directly. I didn't really ask them. I told them what I wanted from them, but I haven't. And I just did that yesterday. So I don't know. And I'll stay on it. You know, I'll keep asking questions and ask them why they're not. You know, because I'm not going to stand down. There's no way I'm going to stand down on this. I mean, I would prefer there is a little chaos in our country than to live under corruption and deception of this sort.
Well,
because the truth is the truth here.
The Congress is operating under several means to avoid this. The noble lie, which is everybody, all these cities are going to burn. They're cowards. They're afraid of the media. They're afraid of the ridicule. Eric probably could throw a few more ideas in there.
And Ted Cruz, I mean, his dad was a minister or a preacher or something. You'd think that he would have a hard time sleeping at night. I mean, just from a moral standpoint.
I'm sorry, I like Ted Cruz, but he's not eligible.
No, I mean, just to understand what this is, I mean, he has the sheriff's kit, so we know that. And you would think that with his background, he would be not sleeping at night. You would think these guys wouldn't sleep at night, knowing this information and then saying, I know this information here. And then they had, the one that was a Secret Service who quit, Dan, or is his name Dan? He's running for Senate or something.
Yep.
And he was saying
Dan Bongino, very adamantly,
and this lady said, well, doesn't it scare you? This is the most important corrupt thing in the world, and this is that the president is a fraud. And he said, oh, no, I believe he was, you know, and when they say, I believe, that even sounds ridiculous. Who cares what you believe?
They're going to be on the wrong side of history. When it hits the fan, all these people will be remembered as being on the wrong side of history.
They're going
Neville Chamberlain's name will always be associated with kissing up to Hitler. These people kissed up to our tyrant, a domestic enemy, Obama.
That's right.
I don't get how they sleep at night.
As the commander said before, it's a coup. As the commander said before, it's a coup. And you know, I just wanted to say as an aside, you know, as a person of color, as they like to call us. I don't think for a second that blacks would riot if Obama was taken down. If black folks knew what we knew, I think you'd see nothing but an ocean of black faces outside the White House with torches and pitchforks, and they would be more than happy to carry Mr. Obama out on a rail.
Obama's not a culturally African American anyway. He's not. He's a citizen of the world.
No, he's not.
He's anti-American.
Yes. Oh, that's for sure.
Is he
a colonist? About anti-colonist or something?
He's a colonist.
From England, from
anti-colonialist.
From his father.
The Dieppe movie.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, regardless of where he was born or where he's from, and we have not made that determination, he has never been an American in his heart or in his mind. I mean, he was raised in other places. He was raised in a culture of people who despise this country and have wanted to bring it down for 50, 60 years.
Both his parents despised America, and his mother lived. His mother lived most of her adult life outside the USA.
Yeah.
Spent most of her adult life.
Yes.
Well, I think God's working in mysterious ways here. I think he's working in mysterious ways because never have I ever been so adamant, involved, concentrating on the care of our country as I mean, this is my top priority. I mean, besides taking care of my family and that type of thing, but as far as where all my energy goes, it's going into this. And so I'm looking at it as what is God, you know, what is he thinking about this? And I'm thinking he's working in a mysterious way and that he is showing us, and we'd have to thank Obama for this in a way, because first of all, he's fraudulent, and that is great for us, because he cannot be our president. So therefore, you know, that's great for us. So there's one thing that's great for us. And the second thing is that he's showing us how great and fragile our country is. And I'm hoping we can, you know, salvage it and come back to America that, you know, we love, and that all the men that have fought and died for, especially for them. But it, I look at it as it lets us see how easily and how we should care for our country so much more, which, you know, before you just take it for granted. I mean, I was an American and I took all this for granted. And now when I see this happening, it makes me so much more aware and so much more caring about our country than I ever was before.
You're right. Obama is the personification of
yeah.
the evil forces of this world. He is the personification of the evil forces that are trying to destroy the greatest political system ever created by man, the Constitutional
Precisely.
Republic of the United States.
Yeah, that's for
yeah.
sure. That's for sure. The gem.
Yeah.
And we have it.
We've got John from Florida. He's got a question about the Sergeant of Arms and Provost getting a sheriff's kit. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, John. Thanks for joining us. You had a question about the sheriff's kits. We've got about 60 seconds here.
Yeah, I was just curious if those two people there, the provost marshal and the sergeant of arms, received these kits, and upon their review, will they be doing their jobs?
Is the producer available to address that?
I don't know. I was hoping that Pam could, but she dropped. Let's see. I wasn't in on the distributions, and so unfortunately I can't answer that question.
And if they fail to do their job, there's no Congress, there's no politician that has the authority to remove these people. It's the people that have the utmost authority to remove anyone in this government.
And I quite agree with you. I quite agree with you. And to be honest, I think that despite the jaded and cynical outlook that most of us have toward our elected officials, I think it's important that we have done the things that we have done, like getting the sheriff's kits into their hands and doing the things that, you know, we have a lot more people. We have a lot more people who are asking questions than we used to. You know, this government shutdown thing where Obama acted like a dictator. Then on the heels of that, the Obamacare rollout has just gotten a lot of folks. They've had a rude awakening, and this is the best time for them to be presented with this kind of information, because they're going to be able to put two and two together as to why it's happening. The Congress will be of much more use to us if we have put them on record as being aware of some of these things, and we're out there complaining, which a lot more people are starting. If these people aren't doing their jobs, as you said, John, it is most definitely up to us. And Obama knows that. We have some time left. Obviously, the president, as I've said on my show and in my writings, has doubled down on the kinds of things that he's doing. He's talking about income inequality. He's smacking people in terms of his rhetoric, and all of that. We are making headway. These guys are very, very desperate. They do still put up a good front, but as I say on my show, we are definitely making headway. There are forces marshaled against this administration that we don't know about, or that we are not privy to all of the goings on, and we also have Congress. Now, I can't imagine the kinds of meetings that are being held in back rooms, but they have to see this thing going to where it might go, like by the way of Iceland, with millions of people in the streets. They don't want to be on our bad side when that happens. So believe me, they're not all, you know, sitting on their hands, and they're not all, although some of them are rather treasonous, they're not all waiting for Obama to win and get rid of all of the troublemakers. Anyway, thanks everybody for being here. Thanks for you callers. Thanks, Commander Kirchner. This is Eric Rush. I will be with you on full contact. Catch me at ericrush.com, ericrush.com. Take care. God bless.
You didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.